I had the finest job in the world for 22 years in uniform, 7 years here at DINFOS as the master PA instructor, the media relations expert. And again, I trained people all over the world, including Secretary of Defense. And to me, what a job.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of The DINFOS Way, a Department of Defense podcast developed and produced at the Defense Information School. This program is dedicated to developing and showcasing the skills of military communicators, public affairs professionals, and industry experts from all over the world. I'm your host, Jack Rouse. I'm a former Navy and civilian journalist and a current training specialist here at DINFOS. Every year at the schoolhouse, we induct the very best military communicators into the DINFOS Hall of Fame, recognizing their lifelong contributions to the career field. Joining us today is a 2025 Hall of Fame inductee, Dr. Joseph Trahan. Dr. Trahan is a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and a former public affairs officer who is now an expert trainer in media relations and crisis communications. He joins us today to talk about his legendary life and career and give us some insight on what it takes to make the Hall of Fame. Dr. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Thank you both, all three of you, for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's such a pleasure to have you on the show. It looks like you guys are really having a great time today, everybody at the Hall of Fame ceremony.
Yeah, it's quite humbling to think that a career that started in 1981, I never thought I'd ever be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, and like I mentioned in my speech, I mean, I got a 71 in journalism. I passed. I mean, that was the important thing. But DINFOS truly changed my life. And that was at Fort Ben Harrison. And then I came back here to be an instructor in 97 to 2003. So it's never left me. And it's a brotherhood and sisterhood, a bond. And again, as we brought in the videographers, the photographers, and DINFOS, to me, to tell the story of the greatest military on the face of the earth. I don't know a better job.
Yeah, 100%.
This is an awesome job.
Tell me a little bit about your life and career and sort of what brought you to the Hall of Fame ceremony today.
Well, I think I've always loved communications. And, you know, I come from a family in New Orleans. You know, my mother's Italian, my dad's Cajun, very confusing childhood. But we communicate with our hands and talk a lot. And even at Tulane, when I got my bachelor's degree, I wanted to be in communication, but I did American military history. But I always had this inkling. And when I went in the Army, I was an armor officer. And then the Army said, my God, you write well, you speak well. How'd you like to be in public affairs? And at that time, it was 13 weeks. Now it's, what, 8? I mean, you know, I guess we were slower learners in that time in the 80s. And when I came to DINFOS and got selected for it, it just the light went on and said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Then the Army said, we'll send you to graduate school too. I said, okay. And I got a master's at Ball State out of Muncie, Indiana. It's just been a career of telling that story. And again, my rank only went to lieutenant colonel because I have a big mouth, and that got me in trouble. I would tell colonels and generals, no, you're wrong, and this is why. And they would say, you're not going to make full colonel. And I retired as a lieutenant colonel. But what better job? I mean, and to work with the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, the Coast Guard, the Canadian forces were trained, international students. I mean, to me, it was just so awesome about what we teach, strength, you know, and then strength through truth. And I think that's important.
Yeah. What were some of the things that you really thought were important and tried to promote during your career? Like, what key skills and aspects of our career as a whole were most interesting to you that you felt were important to talk about and promote?
I think we're storytellers. I think it's important. When I was a press camp headquarters, when I was a commander, and I would tell my troops, whenever we would deploy, whatever units we were with, go out and tell the stories about the cooks, the motor pool people, the people, the logistics people, the quartermaster. And telling those stories to me are so important. But I think the skills that will never end, even in this wonderful world with this brand new camera and the things we've got here, I mean, the ability to write. To keep it simple. The Army taught me, keep it simple, stupid. You don't like stupid, sweetheart, sweet potato pies, whoever you want. I think that's important. Secondly, the ability to speak. I mean, think about it. The worst fear in our world is not death. It's public speaking. Mm-hmm. Like, death needs a public relations campaign. It's number two. I mean, so public speaking is number one. And the ability to have interpersonal skills that create relationships. And I thought that was so important in my career. I mean, as a public affairs officer, you report directly to the commander. You work for the commander. You're a personal staff officer, but you have to basically work with everybody else. Mm-hmm. So relationships become real important. And finally, in my other life now, I'm a FEMA contract instructor, and I'm still doing that. And I teach anywhere from basic all the way to the executive PIO class. And again, those classes are telling or helping people throughout our nation words like don't drown, turn around. And we teach them there's four principles for every message. And I think this is critically important. First, we have to give a message hope. Like the people in North Carolina got hit by a terrible hurricane. Give them hope that one day it'll come back. Number two is stability. Our lives, again, when we're thrown off of stability, we got to have some stability in a terrible hurricane. My parents went through Hurricane Katrina. We did too. My parents lost everything. We only had trees down, roof damage. We lost our fences. Compared to my parents, they'd lost everything. The third thing is compassion. We're all human beings. I think our messages have to reach out and say, we're here to help you, and this is why we're here to help you. And we don't distinguish and say, oh, no, you're this. We're not going to help you. We help everybody. And the last thing is trust. It's like Billy Joe said, it's all about faith. It's all about trust. If we don't do that, we fail. And I think public affairs and what I was taught at DINFOS has stayed with me that whole time, the ability to do that. So I constantly try to improve my craft. That's what I try to do.
You know, it sounds like that the fundamental skills of our career field are things that never change. And it sounds like those are still the things that you're teaching today in your crisis communication classes. So would you agree with that? Would you say that those fundamental skills?
I totally agree. And I think back to 1981 when we were taught crisis communication, we were taught you have a golden hour. You ever seen the movie Stripes?
Mm-hmm.
What happened to your drill sergeant? Blown up, sir. That paradigm's been blown up forever. We have 90 seconds to shape the message because of social media. It's both a blessing and a curse. Yeah. And if you don't put something out, what we call holding statements, which I was taught from FEMA, if you don't get something out, there'll be millions of trolls coming after you telling they're not doing their job. And I'm a believer in shaping the message, not being shaped by the message. Yeah. And I'll never forget that golden hour when I was at DINFOS, and as my life, and again, that's been 44 years since I became a public affairs officer. I mean, the time has shrunk. You have 90 seconds. You're correct in your comment. The principles are the same. However, with social media, it's quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Be brief, be brilliant, and be gone. And if you don't do that, you fail. You fail.
I really like the idea that you touched on there of holding statements and sort of the idea of you know, you've got to put out something in this world that we live in because otherwise someone else is going to be saying something. So can you expound on that a little
bit? Sure, sure. Think about crisis we see. We have a crisis, it seems like, every day. My question is, how long is this mass shootings going to continue? You know, I worry my granddaughter is a sophomore in high school. I mean, when I went to high school, I went to an all-male high school. What a drag that was. But nobody had a gun. I mean, we had fist fights. And the principal would pull us apart, and then we'd fight each other and be over, and then we became friends. But think about it now. My granddaughter has to worry about some crazy, I hate to use that word, but I guess it is, coming in there and shooting people like those poor kids in that church, Asuncion Church in again, Minneapolis. That's terrible. So if you think the principles of a holding statement is, the holding statement is from the past, what we were. DINFOS has a 61-year history of telling that story. Any organizations I've ever worked with in the Army just celebrated its 250th birthday. I mean, the Army's made mistakes, believe me. We all make mistakes. But the past is what we've done in the past. And then there's a holding statement for the present. This is what's happening right now. Who, what, where, when, why, how. I get as much information as I can, especially in a moving crisis like a mass shooting. I mean, a hurricane is bad enough, and I've done recovery with that as well. Mm. But that present statement is, what are we doing now? And the future is, what are we going to do to rebuild it? In North Carolina, I taught a student named Justin Graney, and that young man was fighting social media. So he had so many social media stories that, again, I just trained him a month before at FEMA, and this hurricane hit, and it destroyed Western North Carolina. He got a social media troll, said there were 500 North Carolinians hanging from the trees. So you know what he did? He ran the story down. He went to the place, took the reporters, and said, there are no 500 people hanging from the trees. I mean, he went to the social influencer, knocked on a door, and said, here, we have photos. That's not true. He said, well, I was just pushing it forward. And Justin Graney is fighting the battle every single day. And he's still fighting the battle. So again, those holding statements that we talk about, the past. And he would say, I work for North Carolina. I'm here too. In the past, we've helped you. In the present, this is what we're doing. Every single day, he was making progress, but people were not listening to that because they were listening to something else. And the last statement is the future. It's going to take 30 to 35 years to rebuild that beautiful area, Western North Carolina. We have just been there. We had been there in Asheville. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful place. And he's my hero because he's doing exactly what we're talking about. He's trying to get ahead of the message. And that's the battle with social media, to me, to try and get ahead of that battle right now.
So what fundamental skills do you think are important for people to learn and to put into practice now in this fast-paced environment with social media and everything else that we've got to deal with?
I think the first thing, we need direct access to the boss. We're not talking about Bruce Springsteen. I want to see him before I die because I love his music. But we, again, as a public affairs officer, through the ranks from lieutenant all the way to lieutenant colonel, when I would be hired, I said, sir, I need direct access to you. Oh, you got to talk to my chief of staff. No, I don't. Because it's just like if I went around the room for communication, what happens over here will be totally different over here. So I want to tell the general the naked truth. And that's the first thing, direct access to the top dog. Number two, you have to have communication skills that are outstanding, period. You have to be a superb communicator. Number three, you have to build relationships. I think it's critical. And I've met people that didn't like me or I didn't. And then we'd end up becoming friends, because at least in the Army, that would usually happen. I think fourthly, you need a sense of humor. I think what P.T. Barnum said, get to the front of the crowd when they're running out of you, when they're running you out of town. Looks like you're leading a parade. You got to laugh at yourself. Number five, I think we have to be humble. We have to be humble. I mean, I've made mistakes. I'm willing to accept those mistakes. But I think as a public affairs officer, I have to do that. Number six, I think my job is to give advice. My job is to give counsel. Not always taken, the reason I didn't make full colonel, but to be proactive in nature, to constantly look, how do I get ahead, especially in a crisis, whether it's a mass shooting or a hurricane or a tornado or an earthquake or whatever it may be, or a tsunami, heaven forbid. But I think those qualities are so critical. And I think finally, you have to be, I think two parts, you have to have a tough skin, like the skin of a rhino, the heart of a lamb, and the soul of a lion. I think you have to have those things. And I think you also have to understand that you will make mistakes and be willing to accept that. I had the finest job in the world for 22 years in uniform, 7 years here at DINFOS as the master PA instructor, the media relations expert. And again, I trained people all over the world, including Secretary of Defense. And to me, what a job to tell that story. I don't know if I answered the question, but I think those are the traits that we need. And I throw in kind of a lanyard. We say that in Louisiana. Like, you got to be super Gumby. You got to be flexible. Like we saw in the ceremony today when Colonel Martin said, I'm not finished yet. okay. But you got to be super Gumby because things go wrong.
What is it about the current changes in the career field that sort of gives you hope for the future? I know we've talked about social media and how we have to adapt to it and be ready and always be in a situation where we can use it appropriately. But I know there's other challenges and things that are out there as well. And sort of what things do you think we need to focus on as we overcome those challenges?
I'm just so impressed walking around this building again. It's been 23. I left in 2003. To open my own business, Trahan & Associates. I never looked back. I was a GS-14. Matter of fact, Colonel Bell was the commandant. When I walked in to say, I'm gonna resign, he said, what? Nobody resigns from a GS-14. It was scary. I took a leap of faith. But I watched these young men and women today, and as I walked around, and I thought to myself, how impressive are they? I mean, you look at their face, and they're here because they want to be here. I'm not saying people don't make mistakes and fail and have to be recycled, but it just warms my heart how sharp they are. I could see it in their eyes. I could hear it in their voice. I think a person who enters our field must be willing to constantly change, to constantly improve. Mm-hmm. I'm 71 years old. I learn something new every day. My 15-year-old granddaughter tells me every day, no, Grandpa, you're wrong. I mean, I'm willing to learn that. But these young people I see as I walk these hallways when I was doing my tour, they impress me from the first minute I ever got here in 1997 as an instructor, kind of like we were the inmates coming back to the asylum. We were running the asylum. But I think it gives me hope because, number one, they're flexible. Number two, they're adaptable. Number three, they're able to grab things and do it quick. I would give them some a caution to make sure they dig in deep on the content. Mm-hmm. Because our ability, whether you're a radio broadcaster or a TV person or videographer or whoever, is to tell a story that has context. And sometimes they may miss that because of the speed. I mean, again, I have to make sure I do that. But I'm impressed by what I'm seeing. I think there's tremendous hope for the future. I think social media, like I mentioned, is a blessing and a curse. Use it to our advantage. But make sure we're telling a story the right way. But again, walking these halls today, as myself and Chief Connors was walking me around, those young men standing, women standing up, how are you doing, sir? I'm thinking, you know, wow, I was that young kid a long time ago. It just impresses me when I come here. It makes me feel good what I see from them. So I don't know if that answered your question. But
yeah, for sure. You know, and as someone too, you've had the an amazing opportunity to not only be a trainer here for so long, which not a lot of people get to do.
No.
But then to also have been a lifelong trainer afterwards.
Yes.
So what kind of advice do you have for trainers? Because we've got obviously teachers here at DINFOS, but then we expect all of our students to go out and train other people in the career field as well. So give me some advice for trainers, something you think is important for them.
You know, I was going over my speech, you know, my better half sitting behind me now, you know, about how long I was told you got 3 to 5 minutes, you know, and I'm thinking, I wrote down my comments, but I never pulled it out. I am who I am. I mean, the way I teach is the way I teach. That it got me in trouble being in academia because my BS meter, you know, it goes off quick in academia. I love teaching and I love working with students. And I was told at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, you'll never get tenure here. Why? Because you teach too well. You embarrass other people. So my first advice as a trainer, and again, I was the first master instructor at DINFOS when I was here.
Oh, really? I didn't know
I was the first one.
That's a heck of an honor.
I still have the ID card, master instructor number one.
Wow.
I was the first one ever. Matter of fact, they probably had to put my photo on the board there.
I'm sure they did.
You know, and to me, my job was not only to instruct, but mentor instructors. So what I would say is work to your strength. That sounds like voodoo. You know, I'm Catholic and voodoo, we kind of go together. Well, I try to get into your body, not literally, but I try to work to your strength. I mean, if I would be counseling you, that's what I would recommend to instructors. What is your strength when you teach? For instance, even though I wrote this down, I didn't pull it out because I know I'm going to be nervous if I have to read that. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I'd say, I would watch the instructor and say, this is what I recommend you do. Be like Popeye. I am who I am. I'm not saying I don't have any distracting things. I do like any other person. And I constantly try to improve. But the first thing is be yourself. Secondly, know your audience. Mm. I mean, it was such an honor to teach here. It truly was. When I walked in as a civilian and I was looking at those uniforms that I had worn to and raised their hand and said, I will defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Wow. These young men and women were going to go out and tell that story. So I think the second thing is know your audience. Know who you're talking with. Thirdly, I think use language that they understand. I think, you know, my children would kid, what grade is dad in when I was working on my PhD? Because sometimes you get in that PhD seminar and some of those people talk just to hear their voices. You think, what? And I try to be where I communicate with, not to. And I think that's important. And finally, I think have a passion. I love what I'm doing. I mean, to me, it's an adrenaline rush for me to walk. I was nervous when I walked up there, but it's an adrenaline rush to me. And I think about the fact that if my words motivate one person, I've done my job. More importantly, I've passed it on to the next generation. That would be my advice, and that's what I would try to give these instructors because I was their mentor. I would go pop into class and evaluate them. And I didn't say it was evaluating. I say I'd look at things they're doing, and I still do this because DINFOS taught me this in my media training. Whenever I evaluate, if I'm going to do an interview with you, I'm going to go and say, these are the things you did well. These are the things I want you to work on. I'm not going to constructively criticize you. Because I had a traumatic experience in 1981. In Fort Ben Harrison, there was a bald-headed Marine who trashed me in a media interview. And he constructively criticized me. And I made a point at that moment in my life, whenever I train, I will never use the two words constructive criticism. Because you know what word I hear? One, criticism. So the rest of my life has been improvement. These are the things I want you to do and improve. So that's what I would do with instructors when I was here. I would sit in the back of the room. I'd give them feedback to improve them. I mean, again, you have to find what is your place. Mm-hmm. How do you like to instruct? Like I wanted to move around. They told me, well, it's being videotaped. Okay, so they couldn't pick. I bet you they could have picked up my sound. I got a big enough voice to do that. But that's what I would recommend now. Again, to me, teaching is my why. It's a passion to pass on to the next generation.
And it's interesting, too, because one of the things that you concentrate on is the crisis communications aspect. And that is obviously something that's very big on the officer side. It's not something that the enlisted students get to deal with very much, which is why I want to talk about it. Because our podcast is for everyone. And so
for the folks
who don't know too much about it, how important is controlling the narrative in crisis communications? And how do you make sure that you're doing that in a way that is not only appropriate, matches operational security, but draws your audience in? How do you do that?
Well, all my experience in dealing with crisis have been at the federal level. Probably the most substantial one is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, was 1992 in Hurricane Andrew. Mm-hmm. We were deployed. We put 25,000 troops on the ground. Our job was to communicate and do it quickly. And it wasn't just officers. It was NCOs that were in my unit, enlisted that were in my broadcasters were critical. We set up a radio station in Homestead within 24 hours. Wow. And we got the biggest I can't remember the megawatts. We had to get the FCC to approve. Again, it was an AM station that we were able to broadcast all the way to Canada, down into Mexico. And we ran a radio station that broadcast in English, Spanish, and Creole 24/7. And those were NCOs. And I think the important thing in this crisis, especially after the terrible devastation of Andrew, was where do the people go for help? Where do they get supplies? What's more important? Yeah, food and water and shelter. But you know what else is important? Information. And if that doesn't happen, then we create a problem. And I was looking for every avenue, and my NCOs, my enlisted, were critical. And I kept telling them, we need to anticipate, we need to coordinate, we need to cooperate, and we need to communicate. And we need to do it in all languages. Because Miami has at least three languages, probably more now from them. And I used everything I can. The ham operator people, these 50 people, eccentric looking people show up at my, and we went Eastern Airlines and Rivers Johnson was there. And they said, we want to help you. I said, who are you? They were ham operators. They're strange people. But you know something? They were awesome. They helped us. So you try to use everything you can to communicate because information is the sauce. Because we hunger for information. So in crisis communication, to me, those four things of anticipate, coordinate, cooperate, and communicate are critical to that. My NCOs were critical to that. My sergeant major, our first sergeant. I mean, we were constantly writing news releases. We were thinking proactively, how do we get ahead of this? We put 24,000 American troops on the ground in 48 hours. That was the largest deployment of American troops on American soil since Reconstruction.
Wow.
And I, as far as crisis, everybody has a part of it. Everybody on your team has to, not just the officers. When we wrote crisis plans, we wrote it with our NCOs, our enlisted. Everybody knew that part. And I think that was important for us.
What are some common misconceptions that you see about our career field? And what do you tell folks who sort of bring to you mixed information?
Well, you know, the big adage is, in public affairs, you have to like people. So do cannibals. Cannibals like people, too. I mean, you think about it. I mean, and then the other thing is anybody can do what you do. No. I just had surgery. It's almost a year and a half now on my hip. My surgeon, oh, my God, he's a gunslinger. I asked him, I said, do you ever make mistakes? No, I don't. Now, think about it. If I go in and say, I'm going to do your hip, and I'm a public affairs person, I don't know the first thing about doing that. But yet anybody can be put in our job, and it infuriates me that people being put in our jobs who are not trained. It troubles me greatly. It still troubles me. But now I'm older, so I can say whatever I want to say now. My career is done. But to me, defending the public affairs, that's why DINFOS is so important. What DINFOS does, photography, videography, radio broadcasting, TV, everything we do, plus public affairs and journalism, to me, we train people in this skill. We truly do. And again, I think the misconception is anybody can do your job. Really, you can be a public affairs. My son is my legacy. He worked for a small NFL team you probably never heard of in Dallas, the Dallas Cowboys. You probably never heard of
them. Never once.
Yeah. Yeah, he worked for them for 17 years. My son is awesome. He just left. He's working for the World Cup that's coming to Dallas. He's the vice president of media relations. He's awesome. But again, people say always that they can do your job. And that's troubling to me because I don't go up to my surgeon and say, I can do your job. I can't do his job. Then to me, reinforce that. And we still see it in positions, not only in the military, but in public service, other public service, in corporations, where they're good with people. Again, cannibals are good with people. So I think that's the biggest misconception. It still is. What y'all do is outstanding to me. You're trained to do this, and you do it well.
Well, thank you. Well, we do the best we can around here.
I think y'all do a great job. I've listened to them.
So tell me what it means to you to come back here today after all of this and after all this career and everything that you've done to be brought into the Hall of Fame. What is that like? What does it make you feel like?
Wow. We drove by yesterday. We stayed at the Candlewood, and we came by, and it was like the Holy Grail. I mean, it was when I came here. We went trailers initially. So when I was hired, we went trailers till we moved into this building. And then, of course, it's expanded since I was here. It just gave me a warm feeling because we had the greatest instructor pool I've ever worked with, including Rivers Johnson. But the people I taught with were phenomenal. The students were phenomenal. It just – every single day that I came here – I knew I had a clear purpose, that in some small way, my little job of training public affairs officers was helping defend the United States of America by the words, the deeds, the videos, the pictures that they take. And in some small way, I thought I was making – I mean, it wasn't with a rifle. It was with words, symbols, photos. So I just – it means tremendous – it means so much to me because – DINFOS was the beginning of a career I could never have had. And that Army branch career person who put me here, well, at Fort Ben Harrison, it changed my life. It put me on a trajectory that led to 3 degrees. I tried to get the Army to pay for the PhD. They said, you're really pushing your luck, okay? But I got 2 out of 3. Like Meatloaf says, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. But it just meant so much to come here and then to hear the other 4 inductees and what they've done. I mean, I've worked with Sarah Hood before. She's outstanding. Johnny B, outstanding. I had not met Ken or Amy, but I just so impressive. But when I look in that room and I saw the people and I thought, I'm one of them. I'm a DINFOS trained killer. And to me, everywhere I've been, I've met other DINFOS trained killers. So this place, DINFOS, is truly my professional home. I mean, these are the brothers and sisters I'd serve with. That's a long-winded way to answer that question.
Yeah. No, that's great. Tell me, I guess, what advice you would give to the young people who are here in this building that surround us as we record this, who hope to be in the Hall of Fame one day. What would you tell them?
I say, stay true to your moral compass. What's your North Star? I was relieved 3 times for refusing to lie. Yeah, I probably could have made full colonel, but the check comes. It's a little lower than the full colonel, but it comes. Secondly, I would say constantly work on your craft. Constantly work to improve what you do. The search for excellence continues. To me, it's cradle to grave. I learn every day. I mean, like my granddaughter says, so what? He's got a PhD. He doesn't know everything. And she reminds me of that. Thirdly, I think build relationships. I mean, it brought me to tears to see John and Sarah. Rivers Johnson and I go back to 1992. He's such a great person. And I cry. I cry a lot anyway before. I mean, I cry now even more. But I think develop that relationship. Because we were talking about the people that we serve with. They were just all fantastic people. And I think that build those relationships. Fourth, constantly look at advancements in technology. And be willing to accept that. And again, I'm an old war horse too, but how can I improve? We use social media too, but I think constantly stay on the cutting edge of technology. And I think also the final thing I would recommend, remember, you are responsible for ensuring that you find shared fields of experience between you and the audience you're talking to.
Yeah.
That's what a true communicator does. That's why I believe I can tell if somebody's smiling on the radio, because I was a DJ. I can tell. And I can tell if somebody cares. And if you don't care from your heart, then you got a problem. And I said that was it, but I'd do the final thing, which I mentioned. What's your why? What's your why? I mean, I know my why. Duty, honor, country. My parents taught me service. I mean, to give back. I don't know any other way to be, to continue to give back. I mean, and again, I'm getting up there, but you know, if I can keep giving back and keep helping, and I think those young people today, what's their why? What's their why? And to me, it's so important to have that.
You are ready to come back and teach.
I would
you
in
never
a second.
Left. I'm telling
I would
you.
In a second. I just I would. Getting on the podium to me is just an honor. I mean, when I walk out there, I just, you know, and I still do it with FEMA, and I still do it on my own, and it's just electric. I mean, it just jumps out of me. I mean, I don't know any other way to teach. And that's why I wanted to walk around. It was kind of limiting to be up at the microphone. Can I walk around? No, you can't. You got to be recorded. But it's just something about it. Our son teaches too, and he's phenomenal too. He's better than me, for as I'm concerned. He really is. So,
man, sir, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We really appreciated it, and you've been phenomenal to talk to. You know, your experiences, the things that you've done in your career, and the things that you continue to do today are inspiring, and we really appreciate you not only coming on the show today, but coming into the building and being part of the Hall of Fame. Thank you for everything you do.
Really, I'm honored. Thank you all for what you do, and keep doing a great work, and I'm proud to be on the DinFo's Way podcast, established in 2023.
There you go.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you listen to the DinFo's Way podcast every time it broadcasts. Thank you.
Thank you so
all.
Much for your time, Doctor.
Thank you. Honored. Thank you.